Our alliance with the United States reflects a deep alignment of interests and values.
Australia urges U.S. engagement in Asia. It's Friday, November 24th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, possible U.S. sanctions for Myanmar. Growing saffron to reduce opium production. Will a Taiwan tech firm help U.S. workers? Taking salt from water? Grounded U.S. spy planes? It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Australian government issued a defense white paper Thursday that warned against U.S. disengagement from the Indo-Pacific region and implying Australia will have to shoulder more responsibility for security and economic stability to balance a rising China. The government in Canberra said the international challenges can only be tackled effectively when the world's wealthiest, most innovative, and most powerful country is engaged in solving them. Malcolm Turnbull is Prime Minister.
Now, our white paper argues that today's challenges require Australia to take more responsibility for our own prosperity and security. We must secure our own future. Now, this does not mean being less vigorous in upholding international law, let alone degrading our alliance with the United States. It means pursuing our interests as much in San Francisco as in Shanghai, and always on our own terms. Our alliance with the United States reflects a deep alignment of interests and values while never being a straitjacket for Australian policy making. Our friendship and partnership with China enriches our economy and society while not preventing us from vigorously advancing our own interests.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman Thursday criticized Australia's concerns about territorial disputes in the South China Sea, insisting tensions are cooling down, and said Australia is not directly concerned and China's Southeast Asian neighbors are correctly consulting and negotiating through bilateral channels. The white paper was issued just days after President Donald Trump completed a 12-day five-nation tour of Asia, including two regional summits focused on North Korea and trade. Brad Glosserman is a visiting professor at the Tokyo-based Tama University Center for Rulemaking Strategy. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty the white paper clearly articulates Australia's view of opportunities and challenges of a rising China and the risks of an isolationist America.
What's striking about this, I think, is that the framing of this seems to suggest that the rise of China is more complete and more complex. And I think that there is great concern about the inclinations of the Trump administration and the degree to which the United States will continue to be absolutely the partner that Australia has come to expect.
The white paper makes explicit reference to China's pursuit of influence to, quote, suit its own interests while warning the region is engaged in an open contest for the principles and values on which order will be based.
It is, I think, an in-depth understanding of the nature of the challenge that China provides to the international system. It's not just the size of its military. It's not merely the size of its economy. It is really about the beginnings of, if you will, the muscle flexing that comes with the emergence of a great regional power and perhaps even a global power. The articulation of norms of international behavior, the creation of institutions like the AIIB, initiatives like the Belt and Road Initiative, that suggests that China has designs that include intellectual designs that would offer countries, I think, a framework for engagement that just goes beyond coercion or enticement through money or through force. It's also important to recognize that Australia has been very concerned about the influence of Chinese money in national politics, and that there have been a number of alarming reports in the last few weeks about whether individuals are acting in some ways as spearheads of larger of the Chinese national interests in Australian domestic politics, the media, and in other affairs.
The white paper implies a greater toll for Australia in maintaining freedom of navigation with maritime disputes continuing to create friction. Are we having a peek into the future post-U.S. Asia security atmosphere?
I think what we're getting is a sense of the apprehensions that exist. The Australians have been very clear about articulating these positions even before the Trump administration came to power. But I think what's equally important in this is certainly the acknowledgement of the potential problems, but also the way that Australia is reaching out to other partners. And I think that there's a section, I know that there's a section, that discusses that, relations with Japan, relations with India, with Southeast Asia. And I think that you're seeing a broadening of security relationships, both because of concerns about U.S. behavior, but also because that other partners are now much more capable and much more desirous, if you will, of a larger security role. I'm thinking, for example, of Japan, India, too, where they are prepared to partner with Australia and can partner in Australia in ways that they could not in the past.
Brad Glosserman said the white paper is a reflection of the way Australia is preparing for the competition between the United States, with its changing views on security, and a rising China, which he said has different views about the nature and structure of the international and regional system. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Myanmar and Bangladesh sign agreement on Rohingya return. Search continues for missing sailors after U.S. Navy plane crashes in Western Pacific. Papua New Guinea police move on Australia refugee camp on Manus Island. Fall of China's former internet censor highlights frustrations over controls. U.S. billionaire refugee philanthropist from Vietnam pays it forward. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. Embassy in Myanmar, also known as Burma, has temporarily suspended travel for U.S. officials to parts of Western Rakhine State over concerns about protests following a U.S. determination the security crackdown targeting the Rohingya Muslim minority amounts to ethnic cleansing. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on Wednesday blamed security forces and local vigilantes for what he called intolerable suffering that has forced more than 600,000 to flee to Bangladesh. He said the United States is considering targeted sanctions. Tillerson visited Myanmar following an Association of Southeast Asian Nations summit in the Philippines earlier this month. The UN came to a similar conclusion in September, shortly after the crackdown began this last August. Vijay Sapini, a Toronto-based rights and democracy activist who has monitored Myanmar for years, tells VOA he welcomes the belated U.S. statement.
The Rohingya population has been facing major persecution in the hands of the military, and it is time that a deep action is taken from the West. The U.S. needs to step in and curtail the actions of the junta. The military needs to be curtailed, and the time is high now.
There is some impact on the efforts by the civilian government, led by Aung San Suu Kyi, to improve the situation. Sapani says the biggest hurdle is the existing division of control between the government and military.
The civilian government, led by Dr. Aung San Suu Kyi, literally has no power over the military, and that's been the biggest challenge happening in Burma. While the criticism has been put on the civilian government, the power really stands in the hands of the military. For the civilian government to execute any action that brings towards diversity, management of human rights, and also addressing all other issues like poverty and stuff, there has to be some level of power given to the civilian authorities. The parliament is controlled by the military. The military itself has complete control over defense and home affairs. So realistically, for the civilian government that's led by Aung San Suu Kyi, there needs to be power, and the Western government needs to focus on removing power from the hands of the junta and passing it over to the civilian government.
Further complicating the issue, Sapani points to widespread public opinion in Myanmar, generally supporting the actions the military has been taking.
It has been, unfortunately, a situation where many of the civilian groups have been supporting it, vastly due to deeply run ethnic conflicts that has been going for generations, but also the military rule has led a lot of people to live in poverty and fight for resources is fairly large. That's been one of the biggest issues that needs to be addressed. Are the Rohingya a persecuted community? Absolutely. Is that persecution because of the Buddhist community in Burma? Probably not. There are other Muslims who live in Burma who have been living peacefully. Back in 1988, many of the student movement leaders, whether they're Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim or Christian, collaboratively work together to fight for democracy. The current issue is more an ethnic issue rather than a religious issue, and large part of it is because of limited resources and poverty and people fighting for it. The solution will lie towards transformation of the government powers in the hands of a civilian government, Western governments giving lots of funding to the civilian government and towards reconciliation and poverty elimination.
Pope Francis will travel to the region next week and meet with Myanmar officials, including the army commander, and hold an interfaith meeting with members of the Rohingya community in Bangladesh. Vijay Sapani expects the papal visit will have minimal impact on Myanmar policy. Happening now in Asia, meeting in Havana, Cuba's foreign minister and his North Korean counterpart both rejected the United States' quote, unilateral and arbitrary demands amid unprecedented pressure from the United States and the international community to cease North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile programs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Afghan farmers and traders in the western city of Herat are hoping that saffron cultivation can help wean them off of their addiction to opium production. VOA's Faith Lapidus cultivates this story further.
These delicate purple flowers are the source of one of the world's most expensive spices, and they represent a new opportunity for Afghan farmers who once grew poppies for the opium trade. The illegal drug is the country's biggest export, and government programs and Western donors have worked to halt its production. Saffron, which sells for $1,500 a kilogram in Western markets, is an attractive alternative.
The saffron cultivation is a legal cultivation, and the profit is very high and good compared to opium crop. This is the best cultivation, so my message to those farmers who are still cultivating poppy is that your crop is rejected by God and the people.
Growing saffron has created job opportunities for hundreds of women in Herat. Dozens of women harvest the purple flower in Karok district.
By working here, we can support our family. And with the income we get, we cover all our needs. And we play a positive role in the society.
The local saffron industry has grown and is establishing a reputation for quality in a market dominated by Iran. Some 3,000 hectares are under saffron cultivation in Afghanistan, which should yield more than 8 tons of the valuable spice. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Australia on Thursday called on the United States to build a strong presence in Asia and bolster ties with like-minded partners while warning against China's rising influence. Australia says a more insular United States would be detrimental to the liberal nature of the world's rules-based order. VOA Asia Facebook is filled with top stories and great features. See and share them. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the $10 billion deal to bring a Taiwanese-based electronics manufacturer to Wisconsin is raising questions from critics despite the promise that the investment could provide tens of thousands of new American jobs and other long-term benefits. The deal's critics say Wisconsin taxpayers could lose money in what is the largest U.S. state tax incentive package ever offered to a foreign company. VOA's Kane Faribault has more from Racine, Wisconsin.
When Gonzalo Perez bought the Castlewood Restaurant in Sturtevant, Wisconsin last December, it was one of the few outposts among these corn and soybean fields where farmers could go out to eat. It could become much more than that for Perez.
It's my lottery ticket.
That's because one of the largest economic development projects in the United States is moving in right next door. Taiwanese company Foxconn plans to build a massive flat-screen manufacturing and technology facility in Mount Pleasant, employing thousands of workers when completed. The site is only a few kilometers away from Perez's restaurant, and he hopes it does not take too long to start cashing in.
I hope I get a lot of business from construction people in the beginning.
As they build this facility, they're going to require 10,000 construction employees plus another 6,000 indirect employees. When this ecosystem is up and running in the state of Wisconsin, it will be 13,000 additional employees to the state and another upwards of 20,000 indirect or induced jobs.
Mark Hogan heads the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which helped attract Foxconn to the state.
We passed special legislation, which really created a pathway for the company to be successful in the state. And that had to do with environmental regulations. It had to do with incentives.
The package offered to Foxconn includes approximately $3 billion in tax incentives if the Taiwanese company invests $10 billion in its facility. Those incentives have drawn fire.
This is the largest in U.S. history. And it was somewhat surprising because the state of Wisconsin generally does not play this game.
Economics professor Stephen Deller says one of his primary concerns as a taxpayer is the potential for the state to actually owe money to Foxconn.
But there is the Wisconsin Agricultural and Manufacturing Tax Credit. The way that the taxpayers may be on the hook for paying some money is that if Foxconn is not paying any taxes and they have a tax credit, that means that the state is now paying Foxconn.
But for Gonzalo Perez, who came to the United States from Mexico 30 years ago, his biggest concern is not the tax incentives. He's looking at the potential increase in the number of his customers.
How many customers a day would you say you get right now?
Probably 200.
And after it's built, how many do you think you'll get?
Well, I hope I triple that.
He may not have to wait long to see an uptick in business. Groundbreaking on the new facility is planned for next year, and as many as 1,000 Foxconn employees could be working in the state later in 2018. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Racine, Wisconsin.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Search and rescue operations continued Thursday for three sailors still missing after a U.S. Navy transport plane crashed Wednesday in the Western Pacific. The Navy said eight of the 11 people on board were rescued about 40 minutes after the crash. The Navy says the incident is being investigated. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, having enough clean drinking water has been a challenge in many parts of the world, whether it is a place where water is scarce or abundant. The U.S. Department of Energy has just announced it is providing $15 million in funding for projects to develop solar desalination technology at a lower cost. But even before this announcement, researchers had been working on better ways of desalinating water. VOA's Elizabeth Lee opens the tap and pours the details.
From Los Angeles to Houston and beyond, researchers are working on creating clean, fresh water that is cheaper and more energy efficient.
Salinity in natural waters is increasing.
Amy Childress at the University of Southern California says some places are doing more desalination than they did in the past. Water Planet Inc.'s Eric Hook says the challenges to clean, fresh water are cost and the amount of energy it takes. Water treatment plants are largely driven by electricity. A cheaper, free source of energy is the sun.
The only reason that that is not taken over the world at this point is that it's still intermittent. The sun goes up and it comes down. And what you need in order to make that a continuous baseload is you need batteries, which you can charge up during the day and then you can discharge at night. And the cost of batteries is currently still pretty high.
Qilin Li at Rice University in Houston is building a desalination system that uses solar energy.
Small communities that live in at remote locations, this technology can be an ideal technology. Could also benefit megacities in developing countries that don't have the extensive water and power infrastructure we enjoy here in developed countries.
The goal of the system is to make it modular and cost-efficient, so it could either meet the needs of a small household or a large community.
Lee and her team created a reactor using heat from the sun to turn water into vapor that passes through membrane and becomes pure water. Lee says a low-cost coating on the membrane makes this unique.
So it harvests the sunlight, convert the photon energy in the sunlight to heat, highly efficiently to generate water vapor, and it also serves the separation function to keep the contaminants on the dirty side of the membrane and only allow pure water vapor to go through.
Childress's lab also looks at how waste heat from manufacturing can be used as a resource.
We've gone out to the field, measured waste heat at an industrial site. We come back, we plug that into our system so that we can repeat that waste heat curve over and over and watch the response of membranes to the waste heat.
Membranes that help produce clean water are in high demand. Water Planet's Polycera membrane used to treat wastewater is finding broader applications.
A lot of interest now around the world, not just in industrial wastewater, but we're actually making point of use under the sink water filters for applications in India, in China, and here in the U.S.
With close to 30% of the world's population still lacking safe water at home, researchers will continue to work on harnessing free energy to clean water. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Before advanced satellites and drones began collecting military intelligence, the United States relied on high-flying supersonic aircraft that could quickly penetrate the airspace of adversary countries, take pictures, and exit before being caught. The last of those planes retired in 1998, and it still holds several world records. VOA's George Pudich reports that now spy planes can only be found in museums.
Once the most advanced military airplane in the world, the Lockheed SR-71, nicknamed the Blackbird, holds the place of honor at the Smithsonian Institution's Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center just outside Washington, D.C. Others can be found at smaller air museums around the country, such as the Blackbird Air Park in Palmdale, California. Volunteer guide Bill Flanagan used to fly in the backseat of an SR-71 as a reconnaissance systems officer.
You can see there's a small window which is covered by canvas right now. That was my office. I didn't have a stick to fly the airplane with because I had no forward visibility. But I controlled the radar, the navigation system, the electronic countermeasures, as well as acted as the co-pilot for the pilot right in front of me.
The SR-71 Blackbird was developed after one of its predecessors, Lockheed's U-2, was shot down over the Soviet Union in 1960 during a spy mission for CIA. Realizing the U-2's vulnerabilities, CIA asked for a much faster and higher flying airplane that would also be almost invisible to radar. In only 2 years, using mechanical analog calculating tools called slide rules, Lockheed engineers built the A-12, a one-seater spy plane.
But the Air Force wanted a reconnaissance airplane that basically could carry more sensors. The A-12 and the U-2 only carried like a single camera and maybe a recorder.
And so the two-seater SR-71 was born. With a top speed of over 3,500 kilometers per hour and a service ceiling of almost 26 kilometers, it was practically invulnerable to ground fire. One of them flew from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. in only 64 minutes.
Actually, I had a number of guys who were in the Warsaw Pact Air Defense Network and said, we actually saw the Blackbird very briefly on our radar, and we could not believe how fast it moved across our radar screen and disappeared.
After much wrangling in Congress and the Pentagon about various advanced technology projects, the SR-71s were permanently retired in 1998. Their job was taken over by reconnaissance drones and satellites. But to this day, the Blackbird remains the fastest and highest flying manned aircraft in the world. George Pudich, VOA News.
Time for us to come in for a landing. You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone who's listening in the Philippines on Falcon Radio at Adamson University. And while it is still Friday, or it is early Friday in Asia, it is still Thursday here in the United States, where we are celebrating our Thanksgiving Day holiday. I'm very thankful to work with some great people here at VOA, including director Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd. We're all very thankful that we get to share time with you each day. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.